Welcome to Eye on Horror, the official podcast of iHorror.com. This is episode 95, otherwise known as season 5, episode 17. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me, as always, is your other host, Jacob Davison. How are you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing quite well. I had a very blessed day, which I will be going into once we get to the main conversation.
Blessed or anti-blessed?
Well, angels to some, demons to others.
Good call. Also with us yet again, as always, is your other host, John Correa. How are you doing today, Correa?
I'm doing all right. I'm icing my neck right now because I fell asleep on the couch watching MASH in a weird position, and now my neck is all messed up. And, you know, now that I said that out loud, I realized I've become my father. I became Joe. I'm going to go have an existential crisis in the corner for a little bit. Excuse me, guys.
Did you have dreams of Radar's bare butt?
No, but I did watch the tub episode where he's like, you're going to leave, right? And Hawkeye's like, yeah. And then he does it. And he's just like, what? That's not even naked. He's like, you said you wouldn't pee. God, that show that really is like one of the greatest shows ever. I'm on season 7 now. And it just, dude, when they brought back up the death of the Colonel.
Henry Blake. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, when Radar was like, when they're like, what are you going to remember after this? And he's like, one very terrible day. I was like, no, don't make me relive this.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That is, I remember watching that. That's speaking of being old. I remember watching that when it was like first broadcast. And I was like, holy crap, did somebody die? Because it was unheard of in TV, you know, back then that they would kill a main character. Even if they were leaving the show, they didn't kill him, you know. Yeah. So, oh. As tears. What's been going on this week? I know something. I think all three of us have seen it. The big release this week is Pearl. You guys all seen it?
Oh yeah.
I did not. It was either Pearl or Moon Age Daydream in IMAX. And I'm sorry, Bowie's gonna always win that fight.
Pearl is. I mean, I haven't seen Moon Age Daydream, so I can't actually say whether you made the right decision.
Really,
but
it's
Pearl.
It's real good.
You have to see Pearl on a big screen, and I'll tell you why. It has a completely different vibe from X. I mean, it's still clearly like a proto slasher, but it's more of, instead of being a tribute to like those 70s grindhouse movies like X was, it's a tribute to like classic Hollywood. I mean, it's like that Technicolor brightness. It's almost, and there's more than just the Technicolor that parallels to the Wizard of Oz. There's like all sorts of Wizard of Oz shit in it, but bright reds and blues and yellows, and it's, you know, kind of like Gone with the Windy, and it's a beautifully made movie. Mia Goth walks the line between like complete clowny melodrama and like Oscar-winning performance. She's brilliant for who the character is. There's one monologue in particular where you're like almost in tears watching her, and then you get to the final shot of the movie where it's basically it's this uncomfortably long shot of her face smiling, and you can it might even be in the trailer, you can see the shot all over the place, and that's what the closing credits go over. So she holds this face for like probably 7 or 8 minutes, and it's like, and it's just so campy. But Pearl is terrific.
Yeah, no, I was fortunate enough to be at the pre-screening they were doing at the New Beverly with Ty West. And it was in a double feature with X, which I had previously seen back in March. And it was interesting seeing it in that format, because it works either way. You could see X then Pearl, or you can see Pearl then X. It works both ways. And yeah, no, I totally agree, though, that the movie is itself just kind of one big throwback to the golden age of Hollywood and kind of those picture shows, because it's set in 1918. And the whole theme in the movie is that Pearl wants to escape. So she watches lots of movies, and she sees like all these kind of classical, mostly dance or music centric films. And
she doesn't watch movies. She watches pictures.
Oh, right.
She goes to the pictures.
She's going to the picture show.
Have you guys heard about this new thing? It's called moving pictures. I swear to God, the train was coming right at me.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I do think it's interesting how it kind of threads the needle from that era into a kind of more modern horror, psychological horror, because this feels like if RKO Pictures had made a slasher movie in the 20s or something. It's like similar with how X was a throwback. This is a throwback that blends in the horror.
It's a throw, not quite as far back as it's set. Like X is a throwback to the 70s. It's set in the 70s. This is a throwback to about 20 years after it's set, I guess. But it's a beautifully made movie. It is. I mean, the way that it's shot, the way that it's acted, the way that it's scored. It's a big screener. You should see it in the theater. Yeah. Don't wait for video on it. It's a big screener. And it's weird because it's like, yeah, sure, it pays tribute to like Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind and all that stuff, but also you'll see little nods to like Psycho and Carrie, and there's even one scene that's a lot like a scene from Hereditary, and he wears his influences on his sleeve, or not even maybe his influences, more like film history. It's almost like you can tell Ty West is a film scholar. He knows his cinematic history, because there's no way that everything in this movie is an accident. There's no way.
Oh, no doubt. As for me, like I said, I went to Sunday Mass today, in the sense that for the 35th anniversary of Clive Barker's Hellraiser, the American Cinematheque Aero Theater did a double feature of the original Hellraiser with Hellbound Hellraiser 2, both on 35mm. And it was one of the best horror viewing experiences I think I've ever had, just because, well, I mean, if you've seen Hellraiser and Hellbound Hellraiser 2, you know that like the sequel starts off exactly where the first Hellraiser ends. So it's basically just watching one big movie. And both were beautiful 35mm prints.
And those are the two good ones in the Hellraiser franchise.
Yeah, pretty much. And funny enough, they actually had Peter Atkins, the writer of Hellbound Hellraiser 2, there to kind of talk about the production history, because he even talked a bit about Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, and Hellraiser Bloodlines, and the difficulties therein that went into those productions. But yeah, on Hellraiser and Hellraiser 2, it is funny, though, watching where the franchise started and where it turned into, because, you know, the biggest thing of all is that Pinhead and the Cenobites don't really play that big a role in the first film than, you know, the later sequels had. You know, like Pinhead is basically there for like 5 minutes, and the focus is on Frank and Julia Cotton, who are the real villains of the first couple movies, which I feel is just such an encapsulation of Clive Barker's themes, that there are monsters, but then there are humans that are worse than monsters.
Yeah, no, that's every Clive Barker story down to a T, which is great.
Yeah, and also I do have to give a big shout out to Claire Higgins, who played Julia Cotton, because like that is one of the best villain performances, in my opinion, because especially the evolution, because in the first movie, she's like this housewife that capitulates to Frank to help him get blood. And then she starts to get real into it in every way, like the sex, the violence. And then she comes back in Hellbound Hellraiser 2, and she becomes Hell's girl boss and starts showing her charisma, and, you know, she manipulates Dr. Chouinard's. And, you know, I just really wish that she had stuck with the franchise and come back for the third movie like they had originally planned.
I think that's going to be my next franchise, because I know I just did Chucky and Children of the Corn, but I think Hellraiser and its sequels, because I've only really seen the first two. I think I tried watching the third one once and fell asleep, and then just haven't gone back to it. So I think it's about time I solve the puzzle box and go for it. Well, for me, this week was the beginning of Hooptober. As those of you know, there's the annual 31 movies in 31 days, where Cinemonster on Letterboxd picks out categories, and it's usually stuff like six movies from six decades or eight different countries, stuff like that. And then he'll throw in a few randos in there. And as always, there has to be a Tobe Hooper movie, because, you know, it's Hooptober, of course. So I made my list a few weeks ago, and You can start on the 15th, especially if you got a busy schedule and can't watch a movie every day in October. So I started on the 15th and I've been going hard. I'm about, I think Letterboxd says I'm 15% of the way through my list already. Yeah. So just, and I got to say, taking a few opportunities as always to watch movies that I own, but haven't watched. So for my two Christopher Lee movies, I'm watching the two final performances as Dracula with Dracula, AD 1972 and the Satanic Rites of Dracula, which I watched, AD 1972 the other day. What a fun movie.
Yeah. I really dig that one.
Yeah. I know it got lambasted with the critics back in the day, but it's a historical piece now, you know, like how they used to be historical pieces, but now it's been so long that it's a time capsule of the 70s. It's real fun. but I have to say the highlight of my week so far has been 1992's Mikey. Do you guys remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I know Mikey, the Killer Kid movie.
Yeah. So I know we did an episode on Killer Kids a while ago, but I had never seen Mikey. And my goodness, Mikey was a lot of fun. Speaking of Hellraiser, Ashley Lawrence plays the teacher in it.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. And she's real good in it. Mikey kills her with a slingshot, which was really fun. Oh, spoiler. Sorry.
and that's the best way for a killer kid to strike.
Yeah, like a real Dennis the Menace. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. This movie is Dennis the Menace meets The Good Son, like in the best ways possible. And one of the fun things about it too is it stars Brian Bunsell, who was
Family Ties.
He was in Family Ties, yeah. But for me in my childhood, he was the kid in Blank Check, which was the movie, of course, of the kid who cashes like a check and they give him like way too much money, so he just spends it. And that movie always had like a really weird, like kind of romance thing with him and an adult woman. I was very uncomfortable, especially as an adult. Look back, I'm like, why the fuck would they make this? Guess what? He did it. He did it before in Mikey. He was having he fixated his like, because the whole thing is like, oh, you have to love me unconditionally. He fixates it on like his friend next door's older sister. But at least in this movie, she's a teenager, so it's like not as many years apart. But Blank Check was really weird because he was like 12 and she was like 30 something.
Hear me out. Mikey meets Esther from Orphan.
Oh,
you know, actually, it's pretty funny because there's a lot of similarities in the stories between Mikey and Orphan, because Mikey is adopted into a family and he's got like a shady past because
it's not the same twist,
family.
Though, is it?
No. Because this one, he's actually a kid. But there's some great kills. There's some great dialogue, especially when he does kill Ashley Lawrence. It's great because she's Mikey's teacher. And she's like, Mikey's like, you know, you were a great teacher. I always liked you. But there's one more thing you can teach me. And she's like, what, Mikey? And he just goes, how to die. And then pulls out the slingshot as it slow-mo's like the ball coming at the camera and then hits her in the face.
So she just dies from like, it's not even like a rock. It's just a ball.
They show it later. It's like a big metal marble. They show her body later and it's like lodged in her face. So like it had some, oh, dude, I think it's like eight people and one cat that he kills in the movie.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Mikey goes hard, dude. Like he had some great one-liners. Like it was a fun movie. I highly recommend it. MVD put out a great Blu-ray for it.
Have you guys seen that new movie on Shudder, Speak No Evil?
Oh, I actually saw that several months ago at Sundance.
Okay, did you watch it, Korea?
No. The only new movies I saw is one we're going to discuss later in Moon Age Dream.
Speak No Evil is like it's a really uncomfortable movie. It's it has like Funny Games vibes to it. You know, it's about this. Let me see if I can get this right. It's about a Danish couple who goes and visits a Dutch couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Because they're in Denmark and the Dutch couple's in Holland. So they meet them on vacation and then they invite them over and they don't even know these people, but they go visit them and like it shit happens. I don't even want to like get into the shit that happens, but it's just really uncomfortable, really disturbing. It left me feeling at the end the way I felt at the end of watching Compliance. Which Speak No Evil is probably more of a horror movie than Compliance. You know, it's more of a traditional, you know, it's actually a horror movie. Compliance is questionably a horror movie.
It's more just, psychological.
Yeah. It's just disturbing as fuck. But Speak No Evil is just one of those. I mean, just some of the shit that happens, and you, yeah, it's one of those, like, you're on the escalator and you're like, no, let's turn around. Let's turn around.
Yeah. To be honest, I didn't really like it that much. I mean, I thought it was good, and I thought it did an excellent job in, raising the tension and creating, you know, the social anxiety situations. But I just feel like the premise or thesis didn't really have as much a payoff, and some of the characters weren't really that well developed. So I didn't really feel as strongly about what happened. So, I mean, it was okay. I just didn't think it was that great.
It's one of those. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said. You know, the characters are kind of vague in places. I just think that it is, the payoff is a little anticlimactic, I should say.
Yeah.
But it just goes places. Like, the last act goes places where you're just like, no, let's not go here. It's just really disturbing.
Wait one second. I just realized something. I watched a movie after we recorded our last episode, and I need to mention it. I'm sorry if I'm cutting anyone off.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Have you guys heard of Full Eclipse?
Oh, shit. I love Full Eclipse.
I bought it on VHS forever ago. I finally watched. Okay. Full Eclipse. It's from Anthony Hickox, who did Hellraiser 3. This is one of the reasons why I bring it up. I remembered it.
And Waxwork 1 and 2.
He did Waxwork. He did Sundown. yeah. And Jewel the Ripper, which I also watched on VHS that same day. It was a double feature I did on my own. Mario Van Peebles plays a good cop, and he gets kind of recruited into this, like, secret unit of cops. And it turns out they're all, like, juicing up with, like, werewolf serum or whatever. So they turn into, like, super werewolf cops. And, like, it's the dumbest premise, and it's executed perfectly.
Is this a Vincent movie?
It needs to be.
I was going to say, it sounds like something they'd put out. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an HBO TV movie, so it hasn't really gotten a wide release since, but
it's from, like, 1993. If you can find a copy of it on VHS or DVD, it is worth it. It's got everything. It's got it. It's
or
got
Justin, one. If you're listening to this.
Oh, no, he's the one that recommended it.
Oh,
no, yeah. He's the one that put it on my radar. Yeah, dude. It's got everything. It's got wannabe John Woo jumping through the air, slow mo gun action. It's got crazy, like, gangs that are getting torn apart by X-Men like werewolves.
Are the werewolves the cops?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They're souping up because they got to take the law into their own hand because LA is too crazy. It's like a great companion to Predator 2, you know?
Yeah.
I cannot recommend this movie. Not like it did not deserve to be as good as it was. Like it really, I was really expecting it to be like, oh, this is going to be really cheesy. I was like, holy shit, this is actually really solid.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned X-Men, because apparently it was a major influence on Anthony Hickox when he was making the movie, because he couldn't get the rights to the X-Men, so he decided, you know, superhero, horror, werewolf cop movie.
Yeah, what if I'd made Wolverine a bunch of cops? And of course, Mario Van Peebles, you know, he's always a gem to watch, especially when he's in bad movies. Like, he's always the best part. Like, what was it, Universal Soldier 2? The Return, the terrible movie, but he was very interesting to watch because he was like a program. Just like, why? Anyways, that was my ADHD moment of holy shit, I need to mention this movie.
Yeah, and also putting out into the universe, somebody, for the love of God, get the rights to Full Eclipse and put it on Blu-ray or 4K or whatever you can.
4K, please.
Yeah, 4K Full Moon Full Eclipse. And speaking of home video, today is the 10th anniversary of one of the most popular genre labels out there, Scream Factory.
Yeah. 10 years. Like, I think they said on the thing over 650 titles they put
650
out.
Is what they said. Yeah, that's a lot.
I own about half, maybe.
I think we've all been collecting Scream Factory probably since the beginning. What were your guys's first Scream Factory titles.
I actually got a bit of a story with mine. I was at Rock and Shock 2012. It's the horror rock and roll convention in Worcester, Massachusetts. And it was the first time I think they were, you know, kind of establishing themselves. So they were doing like drawings for free copies of Halloween 3 and Halloween 2 since it was their first releases. And I just so happened to win a copy of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
Of course you won something.
Look, it's just my life. Style. I just go to places and they give me free stuff.
Listen, I don't believe in the luck of the Irish anymore. It's the luck of the Davison.
Yeah,
it's got to be.
It's good stuff. But yeah, I got the copy of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, and you know, and especially at that time, I thought it was a pretty well put together release, because you know, a lot of the stuff put out by I don't know, like the studios were pretty basic. You know, you get the movie, you get maybe an interview trailer. Decent enough, okay. But Scream Factory went all out. You know, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, you had like a new restoration, you had interviews with Tom Atkins and a whole bunch of people involved, commentary, set location visits, all kinds of stuff. And I was just like, oh wow, what are they going to put out next? And the rest is history.
Yeah, mine was also Halloween 3, and it was when those were the only two that were out. And the thing was, for me, Halloween 3, in my opinion, there had never been a decent release of it. Halloween 2, I had already had a DVD of it that I thought was, you know, pretty cool. But Halloween 3, I was like, okay, no, this is the first time I've seen a release worthy of it. So yeah, I went ahead and bit that. And then when they did the whole Halloween set, I ended up with all of them.
Yeah.
What about you, Korea? What was your first Scream Factory?
Oh man, my first was They Live.
Nice.
I remember getting it, and it had the sticker on it that said that had the buy.
Like, yeah, buy.
I think that was about the time where I became like a collector, because like I had been collecting DVDs and Blu-rays for a few years, but like that's when I was like really starting to get into like, all right, I'm buying a lot of these and buying them for the special edition. But I have to say, I think, you know, they've put out so many great titles and they keep re-releasing them and like putting out the newest restorations and stuff. But like the one that like really stuck out for me was Phantom of the Paradise. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
That like mostly just cause like that was one that like, I never saw a copy of it anywhere in small town woods of New Hampshire. And so when I found my DVD copy of it randomly one day, like I was so stoked and I was lending it out to everybody. So that DVD and that case was so worn out just from being lent out to everybody over the years. So to have like a brand new, great looking Blu-ray of it was just, ah.
That was actually going to be my next question. What is your favorite release they've done? And mine, it's obvious to anybody who's listened to my voice over the last, how long we've been doing this, 5 years, Alone in the Dark is mine. Just because nice. it was a holy grail moment for me when they put that out. So yeah. What about you, Jacob?
Oh, you know, that is a tough question.
There are so many to choose from.
Exactly. but yeah, I do feel like some of the favorites are the stuff that do feel like a holy grail or like an impossibility made real, which is why, say, one of my favorites is the 4K UHD release of Alligator starring Robert Forster, because, you know, for the longest time, nobody thought that would ever get a release. And lo and behold, they come in with a 4K release and it just kind of blew people away. And most recently they actually put out a Blu-ray of Stuart Gordon's Space Truckers.
Which
was a childhood favorite of mine. I used to watch it all the time on the Sci-Fi Channel, and I'd dreamed for years of a proper high definition home video release of it, because like I had this really old and crappy DVD pan and scan of it from like 2007, so it just wasn't cutting it anymore. And you know, that's the thing I love about them, that they do these kind of restorations and help these movies find new audiences and, you know, stay preserved so that people can watch them. So
I felt the same way about The Town That Dreaded Sundown when they did it. I'm like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Why? I mean, I love that they did it because I love that movie, but I'm like, what made them think to release The Town That Dreaded Sundown and make it look this good? Because it really has no business looking that good. That would be like cleaning up The Legend of Boggy Creek, which someone else did.
And it looks incredible. Yeah. I can't wait for that 4K. Yeah. It's going to look so good.
Another thing that I saw this past week, that'll be out by the time this this posts is "Don't Worry, Darling." Are you guys familiar with this?
I'm familiar.
Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Nah.
There's actually been a lot of behind the scenes drama because I guess Olivia Wilde, who directed, and I loved Booksmart, her first movie. This one's more psychological drama. I wouldn't really call it horror, but it's psychological drama. Booksmart was flat up comedy. But I guess she fired Shia LaBeouf from it. And then Florence Pugh, who is the female lead, won't do any promotion or is doing very little promotion for the movie. So there's all this behind the scenes.
I feel like a lot of that behind the scenes drama, though, is just internet speculation.
It could be.
I feel like, especially like the Florence Pugh thing, it just feels like people are like, oh, she's not there. There must be some drama going on. And like they did a whole thing that like Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine and it was like debunked the next day. And it's like, guys, you're reaching and grabbing and just let it be.
It's funny because the setup here are my feelings. It's a tale of two halves. The setup and like the first half is really intriguing. You're sitting there going, basically what it's about is about this 50s cul-de-sac development, like this housing project where all these people live. And every day the men leave and go to work and the women take ballet classes and go shopping or sit around and, you know, at the pool kind of a thing. And then the men come home at night and then, you know, and that's how they live their lives. And all the men work at this place called the Victory Project. So it's like a housing development for the people who work at this place. And things start happening that make you kind of think, okay, this place is not on the level. And the setup is brilliant. And then like we were talking about with the Gear Brothers taking the hard turn, it's not the movie you think it is. And, you know, it's the whole time you're waiting for that other shoe to drop. You're like, oh, okay, no, this is not, you know, there's going to be some Shyamalan shit going on, you know, in this movie at some point. And there is, you know, it's not what everything seems. But I don't want to spoil what it is, you know, what the actual deal with the town is. But as the mystery unravels, the whole movie kind of unravels as well. It just kind of doesn't really solve the mystery as well as it should. Florence Pugh is amazing in it. And also surprisingly, Harry Styles is amazing in it too, which is weird because he's like a pop star. And, you know, that's like saying Justin Bieber is going to be amazing in, you know, when he acts in this thing.
Hey, he was great in that episode of CSI that he was in. Remember that?
Oh yeah. When he gets just shot up with like 1,000 bullets.
Well, look, Harry Styles, and he does kind of turn into Harry Styles a bit because there's this long, prolonged dance scene that he does where he actually, the dude's got moves, but it's a well-made movie. I mean, I think she's a competent director. I think that the issue might be with the writing on this one because it just doesn't. Yeah. It didn't quite stick the landing for me, but it's an intriguing premise and it's actually an intriguing movie.
Worth seeing in theaters.
You could probably wait for VOD unless, you know, you have nothing else to see in theaters and you want to go. And speaking of hard turns, another thing that Korea and I also saw this week, which Jacob has seen, and it's going to lead us into our topic, Barbarian.
Yeah, buddy.
Now, we're going to say this right now. We are not spoiling anything about this movie that hasn't been in the trailer. You need to go into this thing as blind as possible.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing. If you have not seen Barbarian, we're going to be pretty vague about things. So you don't really have to worry about listening to us talk about it. But please try to learn as little as possible. I mean, even looking at the cast list on IMDb, it might raise some flags. So yeah, I'll just say one thing. Whatever movie you're expecting out of Barbarian, it's not that movie. It is something completely different. And it doesn't quite take as many hard turns as Retaliator, but pretty damn close.
Yeah, no, that's the thing I really love about Barbarian in that it's a movie in disguise in a way. Like you go in with an expectation for something and what you get is not what you'd expect.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. Yeah, we can't even really talk about it very much, you know, but yeah, it's definitely the surprise movie of the year. I mean, in more ways than one.
Yeah, yeah. No, Barbarian is so well done. And the thing about it is, I like to say movies like this, they have a lot of confidence. Like the movie has fucking balls even just attempting the stuff it pulls off, the tonal change.
Even if you think it doesn't pull off that tone change, it doesn't give a fuck what you think. It's like, we're doing this. Yeah, you're right. I mean, confident is the perfect way to describe Barbarian.
It is confident in mixing genres. It's confident in what it needs to do, because it's not linear. It's not, you know, and when it makes these sudden jumps, it's very jarring, but it doesn't care what you think. Is what it feels like. It's like, no, I need to do this. Oh, we're in the middle of this now. I need to do this now.
And it's like, wait, you're not keeping up? We'll try harder.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. And it's very effective in that way. Like, because there are parts where I laugh my ass off, and there are parts where, and you know, this hasn't happened in a long time, I screamed and jumped in my seat.
It was a great one to see with a crowd, even if the crowd at AMC's suck. but it's definitely one. Please go in as blind as possible. See it with some people. Wear your mask when you go and enjoy, because it's gonna slap you in the face so many times, and you're not gonna know what's next. It's great.
Yeah, and basically, you know, what you see in the trailer is essentially this girl shows up in an Airbnb and it's been double booked and there's already somebody there, which is going to lead us into our topic.
Actually, real quick, was it Bill Skarsgård?
Bill Skarsgård, yeah. Yeah.
Bill Skarsgård. So like just all the Skarsgårds are just like hot. Like we knew this, but like, God damn, was that boy charming in that movie? Like, I was just like, damn, dude, the Skarsgård's fuck. Like,
but the
damn thing
is, he's charming, but he's also intentionally missing. He is the least developed character, and now we're starting to like spoil, so we don't want to talk too much, but like, he's the least developed character in the movie, and
I didn't care. I was lost in those eyes the whole time.
But the thing is, I think that's on purpose, because they want you to be suspicious of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a reason, and we can't talk.
Yeah, I was about to say, stop.
Let's move on.
Hey, man, I just paused for a moment to say that Bill Skarsgård and the rest of the Skarsgårds can get it. No need to suddenly go into spoiler territory here, but
let's go. Basically, what we're talking about, Airbnbs and hotels and hostels and any place where you stay temporarily. This is we're checking into the horror hotel. And let's start off with this, because I have my answer. I want to ask you guys, what do you guys think is the first horror hotel movie?
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind, of course, would be Psycho.
That's my answer, Psycho, because it's got basically everything you know, it's got the crazy owner. It's got the voyeurism. It's basically anything that you think of that can happen when you're in an environment under someone else's control happens. So
I feel like there's gotta be movies before Psycho that take place at a hotel or motel or something. Where
you're going to go back to the old dark house, aren't you? That wasn't a hotel, Korea.
I wasn't going to go there, but like, I'm like, there's gotta be because before we started listing off movies, I just want to talk a little bit about like, why, like, what is it like about hotels or just like places that you go to stay at that inherently have that? That was one of the things I was like kind of getting my brain going when we came up with this topic all week. And for me, at least, I feel like it's that hyper awareness, because you're essentially in a place that's supposed to be your home away from home. So you have that like false sense of security, but also because it's not your home, there's this like otherworldly like thing in the back of your mind where it's always just like, there's something wrong with here, whether it's like, you're looking for bed bugs or cockroaches or like, you know, the mini fridge doesn't work. You know, you're always looking for something wrong. And not only that, but like you're usually in a space where there's a lot of people going out, you know, could be outside your door at any time and there's like no control over it. So there's just like something inherently with these type of environments where it's just like uneasiness, you know?
That's what I was going to say. I already alluded to it earlier. I think it's the fact that you're in a space that you're supposed to use, like, as you said, a home away from home, but it's someone else is in control of it.
Someone else has the key.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Someone else has the key. Someone else could be peeking through the wall. Someone else could have a camera up there. Someone else could be hiding under the bed. You know, someone else, you know, there could be a trap door under the bed and they can just come into your, you know, it's not being in complete control like you would if it was, your house?
Yeah, I think it's it really boils down to trust, or, you know, fear, trust, because you are trusting the caretaker, whoever, to put you up for the night, and you don't know this person. You just met this person, probably. So you just have to trust that this person is just going to let you stay at this place for a night or whatever, and they're not going to kill you, hopefully. And also, going back to what Korea was saying, I actually did think of like a real life instance of hotels, a hotel of horror, well before Psycho, because there was that serial killer H.H. Holmes, who had his own horror hotel where he would lure victims.
Was that actually a hotel, though, or was that just his house that he would lure people into that had?
No, it was a hotel that he built at the World's
Fair. For the World's Fair, you're right. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It was built to house people going to the World's Fair. You're right. Yes, it was a hotel.
Because H.H. Holmes has like a long history of doing like really weird and fucked up shit. But like, of course, his magnum opus was the things. Also, he's from New Hampshire. So, shout out to that. I always say New Hampshire, we're known for Adam Sandler and H.H. Holmes. But
take your pick.
He got caught for stealing a horse. that's what did him in. He got executed for that. Yeah, but anyways, it's not only that, but we also know, like, we don't know what else has gone on in that hotel room, because we all know, like, hotel rooms, you know, that's where people go to meet with their their cheating partners, or
never shine a black light in a hotel room.
There's always that inherentness with it. So yeah, and then it's so yeah, not. I mean, it's yeah. And then you get into like the more specifics where it's like Airbnbs, it's creepier because you are in somebody else's house. It's not like a place that goes by, that is like really relegated by government agencies or anything. And then you have hostels where it's the same thing, but you're sharing it with a bunch of strangers and you don't know what those strangers do. I've had some really weird hostel nights.
Oh boy.
And
a hostel is like a dormitory where, you know, it's like you're literally in a room with a stranger.
With 15 others.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but with strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. But yeah. So, well, what are some of your guys' favorite? Do we want to be specific? Do we want to stick to like, do we want to do it like a moat? What's your favorite motel horror?
Oh, okay. Well, the first one that came to mind, and I've been very excited to talk about, is of course Motel Hell.
Oh, you bastard! You beat me to it.
I know. I'm sorry. It's such a fun movie, and
so good.
I feel like it was very ahead of its time in terms of being kind of a horror comedy, because it's sort of a riff on like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Psycho and a bunch of stuff. Because you got Farmer Vincent and his Motel Hello, who sets up these traps for guests and just kind of people in the vicinity, so that he can make his famous. As the tagline says, it takes all kinds of critters to make Farmer Vincent fritters. It's definitely on the goofier side of things, but it does have kind of a style to it, because it's like this like moralistic farmer and his kind of Igor-ish assistant who are like luring people in so that they can make these famous foodstuffs. And it's like, and yeah, it's just like a little shack motel out in the and the wilds of the highway, and also just it does have the unique feature, because they got that farm where they like plant the people up to their necks and like rip out their vocal cords.
Oh, and they're doing
the they like gurgle. It is really disturbing. Also, Motel Hell has the pig head chainsaw fight, which is just such a badass horror sequence.
I'm not sure if I understand the difference between a motel and a hotel.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really know either. I just assume that a hotel is bigger than a motel, I guess.
Yeah, motels are generally like single story or maybe even just two story, and they're more like driver friendly.
What is that movie with? Is it is it Owen Wilson that's in it? Is it called Vacancy?
Or Vacancy, no? Yes.
Okay, so it's just Vacancy then.
Actually, I just watched that, and it's not Owen.
Luke Wilson.
Luke Wilson. Okay. Yeah. My other choice was Patrick. Too many damn Wilsons. Talk about Skarsgård. We need to have a fight between the Wilsons and the Skarsgårds.
Skarsgårds would totally kill.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're built for it. They do way more action movies.
I mean, did you see The Northman?
Yeah,
like
one Skarsgård could take all three.
One Skarsgård could take down all the Wilsons, and Bill and the father could just be hanging out in the back, just like, you know, making weird eyes at them. You know.
Anyway, yes, Vacancy. It's one of those ones like I was talking about. You don't know where the camera is. You know, basically the gist of the movie, and it's, you know, like 20 years old at this point. So I'm going to spoil a little part of it. The people who own the hotel make snuff films, and there's cameras in that peek into the rooms. So that's another one of those things where it's like, you know, you don't know who's watching when you're in these places.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I just watched Vacancy as a part of my Hooptober, and I love the premise, and I loved a lot of the movie. I think it suffers from casting though. I think that Luke Wilson, Kate Beckinsale was pretty good in it, but I think Luke Wilson was just like kind of miscasted in it. It was a bit rough, and I heard there was a lot of like behind the scenes, like they didn't really have much chemistry, and there's a lot of behind the scenes drama between the two. But like just the basic premise, I liked. I was reading about the writer, and he said that he saw like a motel, and it was like super run down, but it was still open. He's like, how are they making money? And like that was like the inspiration for it, was just thinking, oh, well, they got to be doing something seedy, like maybe making snuff films in there. And and they show the snuff films that they made for the movie. They're fake, but like those were the most horrifying parts. It was just like, wow, they really went for it with it. So it's a decent movie. I just... I just wish they had different actors, you know. I feel like someone has to mention, for hotels at least, The Shining and Dr. Sleep, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Like someone
absolutely.
But someone has to at some point mention it. So that one's interesting because it's one where it's empty as fuck. Like we never really see the hotel open, except for like maybe the opening of The Shining, you know.
And even then, nothing really crazy happens.
And everybody's moving out, so it's still not in full swing. Yeah.
But man, what class? I mean, we've raved about The Shining. That's one of the reasons I was like, yeah, let's mention it. We all know Shining, Dr. Sleep, you know, next level shit right there.
One where that I know that you guys both brought up as well, that where the hotel is basically just the setting. It doesn't really revolve around the hotel at all, but Identity.
Which is basically
kind of like a Shyamalan thriller that just happens to take place at I guess that would be a motel, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but Identity, I feel like it got its due not too long ago. It's kind of, I feel like it's more of a cult movie nowadays, but it is a fascinating premise just because it's like, you know, you got all these random people ending up in this motel on a dark and stormy night, and somebody is bumping them off one by one.
And also you realize they all have stuff in common.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, okay, this isn't random. These aren't 12 random people. Or was it 12 or 10 or 8? Or I don't remember.
Yeah.
If I stopped to count them, I probably could. But yeah. Because also, what a cast in that too. You know, John Cusack, Ray Liotta.
Alfred Molina.
Yeah. Oh. Who is... Who's the girl? I'm picturing her face.
Amanda Peet.
Amanda Peet. Yes, I almost said Amanda Seyfried, and I'm like, no, it's not her. Yeah, Amanda Peet.
Yeah, and back on Stephen King, you know, I feel like he definitely drew a lot from hotels and motels being horror, because I'm sure he used it on a couple other stories. But in terms of the other big film adaptation, there's 1408.
I still haven't seen that one.
Is it 1408 or 1408? I'm really asking. I don't know. I've always said 1408, but is it 1408?
You know, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I don't remember how they pronounced it.
It's like we're back in the 70s debating how to pronounce 2001 A Space Odyssey. Is it 21?
There's a scene in Honk for Jesus Save Your Soul where they get into an argument over whether it's amen or amen. Anyway.
Yeah, well, 1408, let's just call it 1408. I felt like it was a pretty effective horror movie, because, you know, it's like John Cusack specifically is looking for haunted hotels and stuff because he's like a skeptic and wants to prove that there's no supernatural. And, you know, Samuel Jackson's like the manager who very reluctantly gives him the room at the hotel.
He specifically wants to stay in that room. And he won't take no for an answer. And Samuel L. Jackson is like, there's this expensive bottle of scotch or something that they're drinking. And he's like, he's all, you like the scotch? He's like, yeah, he's all, keep the bottle. Just don't take the room. You
know? Yeah, like he repeatedly warns him not to do it. But of course, he does it. And all kinds of insane, supernatural, like Euclidean crazy shit happens, you know, like he can't get out of the room and he starts seeing things and like ghosts and stuff start appearing to him.
Well, he's like he writes books, like travel books of haunted hotels and stuff. But he's also kind of a professional debunker. Like he doesn't believe in this stuff. It's just what he writes about. So he wants to write about this room, but he doesn't believe any of the crap about it. But Samuel L. Jackson does.
Exactly. And guess who was right?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I mean, in the trailer, you know, like in the like advertising, they made it pretty plain.
Do you guys remember that movie from the pandemic year, that IFC movie, The Rental?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was another Airbnb where they find cameras in the showers and shit. It's like
that was great. That was Dave Franco. Dave Franco directed that, right?
Yeah.
No, I thought that did a pretty good job of playing with the premise because, you know, it's like the whole thing, like cameras and stuff in an Airbnb or hotel, that type of horror. But
creepy caretaker.
creepy caretaker. And some of the tropes. But I think it did a pretty good job of kind of putting those on its head and kind of keeping you guessing.
That one was real solid. That I was surprised by that pleasantly. Like I didn't have any. When I say I was surprised, I never think something's going to be bad going into it. But it was for how solid it was. I was like, whoa. You know, it was real good. Another one that's really dope is William Friedkin's Bug.
Oh, never saw that one.
Oh, my gosh.
It's Ashley Judd, Michael Shannon, and she plays like a waitress that's living in a rundown motel room. And she, you know, she's suffering from trauma and alcoholism. And Michael Shannon's like a drifter. And like he says that he's being watched by the government. And like they both just kind of feed into each other's paranoia that like, the room is not only bugged by the government, but like that there's like actual insect bugs in there that are part of it too. And it gets like into some real gross body horror. I feel like bug isn't talked about enough as like being really solid.
Yeah. It doesn't come up that much.
And by the end of this thing, they've got tinfoil up on every damn surface in this room. I mean, it just gets,
they go hard.
It totally does. What about Bad Times at the El Royale? Do you guys remember
that's
that one?
That's a fun one.
I love that movie.
I always felt like I liked that movie more than everybody else.
We all did.
I feel like a lot of people crapped on that movie or were just like, yeah, it was all right. But like, I remember having a lot of fun with it.
I remember it was my number two movie of that year. I love that movie. I just think, and again, talking about, being watched and cameras and stuff and that's just scratching the surface of all the fun shit that goes on at the El Royale.
Yeah. And it also has what I love about a lot of these types of movies when they do, kind of like a full house hotel or motel or whatever. And that it's like intersecting characters, like it's an opportunity to just have a bunch of different characters with all kinds of different personalities and pasts or whatever, meet up and interact and often collide in weird, scary or fun ways. And I think Bad Times at the El Royale did a pretty good job of pulling that off, especially with the cast. You got Jeff Bridges and John Hamm,
Chris Hemsworth,
Cynthia Erivo,
mm-hmm.
Dakota Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Dakota Johnson's hit and miss for me, depending on how she's cast. I think she's kind of limited on what she can play. But if you put her in the right role, she's great. And they put her in the right role in Bad Times at the El Royale she's great in that. Korea, who do you think could win in a fight? The Hemsworth brothers or the Skarsgård brothers?
It's tough. Skarsgård.
I think my money be on the Hemsworths.
It's like, listen, it's just like Chris is Chris is a powerhouse, but Luke's all right.
That's the thing. You put Thor against the Northmen, and then
Bill just takes care of the rest. Also, you have to remember there's like eight of the Skarsgårds. Like there's a lot.
Yeah, they might
be
outnumbered. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, they got the numbers.
And the thing is, even if they're not really brothers, anyone with that last name could join in the fight.
Basically, yeah. I mean, like, you also don't want to leave out the dad, because the dad, like, yeah, I'm, come on. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about two of the best Italian horror movies that take place in American hotels, with City of the Dead and The Beyond.
Oh, yes. 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 Got to talk about those.
Two totally different movies, but I just wanted to throw them out there because they need to be brought up. The Beyond especially is just such a visually delicious movie with, it takes place in New Orleans. Lucio Fulci directed it, and it follows a woman who inherits a haunted hotel that might be the gateway to hell. And boy, do they show it, like when they go into the gates and stuff, and like all the
it's a Fulci movie.
Oh man. Yeah.
And so it was good. Also kind of, well, I guess homaging The Shining, because there's a particularly haunted room in that hotel. It's because it also, yeah, it ties into the plot that, like, this painter named Schwick lived in the hotel until he was melted with acid by an angry mob because they thought his paintings were doorways to hell or something.
Yeah.
I think it did a pretty good job of playing with the premise, even though the hotel isn't really open for most of the movie. It's just kind of like the renovation is right. What's causing the terror. Like, there is, like, even the opening scene, there's like a dude who's like painting a house or he's painting the wall, and then he sees a ghost in the window and he falls and like breaks his back and is having these visions.
It's so good. And the iconography with the white eyes and everything is so awesome. And then of course, City of the Dead, is also really fucking great. You know, that's just feeds into the classic, like, history of witches in New England, especially Massachusetts and whatnot. And yeah. Either way, The Beyond is fucking phenomenal. And if you ever get the chance, because Fabio Frizzi has been doing it a lot, if you get to see it with his live scoring, especially his live rescoring, it's always a blast. It's like a concert. It's a concert and a screening of one of the most visually delicious movies out there. So yeah.
And I was going to bring up, back on Ty West, one of his other movies, The Innkeepers. Did you guys see that one?
Yeah.
No, it's on my Hooptober list this year, though.
Oh, okay. So, all right. No spoilers, but
yeah,
it's slow burn, though. It's
extremely slow burn.
Ty West in general is pretty slow burn, but The Innkeepers is like, it makes House of the Devil look like, you know, like a quick movie.
And Max Fury Road.
Yeah. Yeah. So, something that's fast. I totally blank.
But it's a fun movie, and it's a New England horror movie because it's about these two staff members, Sarah Paxton and Pat Healy.
Pat Healy, my boy.
Yeah, the best.
When I saw him show up in Better Call Saul in that last season, I was like, wait, that's not who that character was. They changed actors, but I was cool with Pat Healy. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, everything's improved with Pat Healy. But anyway, yeah, so it's basically these two people working at this allegedly haunted hotel called the Yankee Peddler Inn, and the hotel's getting shut down. So they decide that they want to document like an actual supernatural phenomenon at the hotel because nobody's ever captured evidence, and stuff happens.
I was eyeballing you. Don't spoil for me.
Yeah, no.
It's coming up.
We're running out of time here, but let's move from hotels and Airbnbs to hostels. And of course, the first two hostel movies, where actually the second hostel movie, I don't think they actually stayed in a hostel, but I think the second one might be better than the first. But anyway, hostel, that, like Korea said, it's like they're dumping you into basically a dormitory, and these guys are all psyched because, you know, their actual roommates are women, and, you know, they're going to the sauna topless because they're, are they Czechoslovakian or Russian?
I think Czechoslovakian.
They're from somewhere else, though, so where they're much, you know, less modest. So these guys are like all psyched. And of course, you know, if you haven't seen Hostel by now, what are you doing with yourself? But it comes at a cost.
Probably watching better movies
than Hostel.
Sorry, I'm not a fan of Hostel. That's just, yeah.
Have you seen the second one?
Nah.
Oh, the second one I think is better. The second one is the women, the victims are women, but also it focuses on the killers too, who, you know, bid and bought their victims. So it goes both ways.
Does it feature some really stupid bits about kids being weird? Cause like that was a thing Eli Roth did a lot, especially early in his career, with like Cabin Fever with that one nunchuck
pancakes
kid. And then like with Hostel with the bubblegum kids, it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna convince these kids to commit murder by giving them a fuck ton of gum. But I checked out.
The bubblegum kids are in this as well, but I don't know if this is going to convince you or not.
Probably not.
They kill one of them.
Kill one of the kids?
One of the bubblegum kids gets killed. We were talking about killing kids.
Yeah, I listen, just because I say I think movies need to go, need to not be scared to go there, doesn't mean I actively want to seek out movies that where kids die. I just want that to be known.
It's pretty fucked up how they kill the kid too, though. But just, you know, anyway. So yeah. That's let's end on killing kids and
though I will say, though, I do like the title of the Hostel series for being a play on words, because, you know, hostile. Yeah,
I'll give them
it's,
that.
It's a fun play on words.
I wonder if anybody thought the Christian Bale movie Hostels was part of the franchise, you know, in a predators, alien, aliens way.
Yeah, the Hostel gets franchised. Hostels everywhere.
I just want to give, before we sign off, a special shout out to Tower of Terror, because I rewatched that recently. Yeah. And that, for a Disney movie, that's pretty solid.
Oh, yeah. I loved that movie when I was a kid.
And it was an awesome ride before they turned it to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the hell out. So, yeah, these are our favorite hotel, motel, Airbnb and hostel movies. I'm sure we forgot some, because let's face it, I always cut these guys off when they're in the middle of talking, because I don't want to edit any 4-hour episodes.
I mean, we didn't even talk about Psycho 2 through 4 or the remake.
Let us know what your favorites are. And if you think we missed any of our favorites, because we probably did. So yeah, let us know. Our theme song is by Restless Spirit, so go check them out. Our artwork is by Chris Fisher, so go check him out. You can check us out on any of the socials at Ion Horror or at ihorror.com. And I'm going to go check into a hotel and get some sleep. So I hope there are cameras around.
Also, share with us your creepiest or weirdest hotel stories. Like, what are some weird things about you? And maybe I'll tell you some of my hostel ones.
Your dormitory ones?
Oh, man. Let me tell you, staying at a hostel for like almost a week in Edinburgh, Scotland. Oh, I got stories.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, we're going to get out of here. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. So for me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
And I'm Jonathan Correa.
Keep your eye on horror.